Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Pat English, 16 years of volunteer and career experience, an engineer with the Metro Charleston Department who currently rides an engine. There's nothing complex about Pat. He's a simple guy who loves going to fires, attending outside training conferences when possible, being around like-minded individuals who take the job seriously, and at the end of the day, wants to go home to the ones he loves and cares for most. With that being said, I present Mr. Pat English.
Cool. So my name is Pat English. I'm an engineer in two different departments in the Charleston, South Carolina area. I've been in the fire service for a grand total of about 16 years now. So I got interested in the fire service when I was a kid, kind of like what little boy doesn't want to be a fireman when he grows up, right? It's kind of a dream of always of ours. I remember I was young, like early elementary school, like young kid. We had a smoke in our attic from a screwed up like attic fan in my house. And we had to call the local fire department, which all volunteer department because Long Island, New York is staffed by 100% volunteers. So they came in with like their 20 trucks. And I was just like, man, this is awesome. Like, this is so cool. I want to do this when I get older. So I started volunteering when I was a senior in high school with my neighborhood department. That kind of got me interested. Probably one of the biggest reasons I did join the fire service though was September 11th. Growing up on Long Island, I grew up in a very Wall Street heavy, you know, financial heavy town. So we got hit very, very hard by 9/11. Like the soot from the towers when they collapsed was on our vehicles in our driveway at my house. Kids kept getting pulled out of class all day long. You know, a lot of kids out of school with my age, older, younger. Their dads never made it home. I know a lot of people who were in the towers that day that thankfully made it out. And I know some people that never made it home. But just kind of watching, you know, the New York City firemen do their thing and make the ultimate sacrifice for 343 of them, you know, it was kind of like, that's what I want to do, you know, help give back to others. So September 11th was probably one of my biggest reasons of actually why I joined the fire department and why I've stayed a fireman for so long now.
Okay. All right. I can definitely relate to you on that. I was at school as well. And granted, you lived closer. And the only reason I know that is because you said that you had soot in the area on your cars.
Yeah.
Where I was at, we did not. But I distinctively remember when they brought my neighbor's cab home because my neighbor worked. I can't remember either if it was the North or South Tower. I can't remember which one, but he worked for the Department of Taxation and Finance.
Okay.
And I remember getting home, watching everything, and then my parents were like, "Man, we got to go check on our neighbor." And I'm like, "Why?" And they're like, "Cause he works in the tower." And I totally forgot he did. But as a side hustle, he drove a cab. And man, long story short, he ended up not making it home. But dude, it was surreal when they got his cab and they brought it to the house.
Yeah.
And like it was covered in that gray ash looking thing. And I was just like, this is wild.
Yeah. So my dad worked in New York City, not in the towers. He worked in the area though. And he ended up having to go across the street from his office and buy like a bike and sneakers, and he biked home from New York City. And he picked me and my sister up from school that day, actually. You know, we got pulled out, and, you know, our mom was like, "Hey, your dad is fine. He's okay. He's on his way home," which was cool. But it was like, it was just, you know, a lot of my buddies, their dads were in the towers, and, you know, all my lacrosse coaches, you know, a couple of them never made it home, unfortunately. So that was like, and where I grew up on the island was just outside of Queens, like two towns outside of Queens. So it was a 30-minute drive into Midtown Manhattan.
Okay.
So I was pretty close to it all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was a wild day. If for any New Yorker, that was a surreal day for sure. And I distinctly remember too hearing no air traffic after a while. It was just like,
yeah,
this is wild.
You know, it's funny because I was younger at the time. I was in seventh grade when it happened. And I just kind of remember I was in second period gym class, and the coaches had a little TV in their office in the locker room, and we're kind of like, They were watching it, but we didn't really know what was going on. And then it started hitting us, you know, when kids got getting put out of class, and you know, they made an announcement, you know, but it never really hits you because you're kind of at that weird age of seventh grade and middle school. You're what, like a 13-year-old kid or something like that? Like, you're kind of like, I know this is bad. I don't understand how bad this is. And then as the day goes by, you know, it was, you know, crazy seeing, you know, classmates and people I called friends and I knew their parents getting pulled out of class all day.
No, I anywho's so you are a current engineer with your department. So my question to you is, what made you hit that step, or you know, or is that a position that you've always wanted, or you know, what's your end goal?
Man, it's funny. When I got in the fire service growing up, you know, being mentored by New York City guys, you hear about how, you know, backstep is life and how they could, you know, ride the backstep forever. And when I didn't know any better, I was kind of like, hey, that sounds awesome. I just want to be a fireman and do fireman things. You know, and then I kind of got on the job in my first department in Columbia, South Carolina, and I kind of realized, hey, I can't do that. So I kind of had a loose plan in my mind. I was kind of like, hey, I'll do 5 years and then promote to driver, full-time driver, and then another 5 as a full-time driver and really hone my craft, and then maybe look at promoting to company officer level. Kind of been pushed past my timelines quicker than I wanted to. Unfortunately, as you know, I'm sure, with staffing levels in all the departments across the country, you don't really have that option. It's, hey, congratulations. Here's your driver book. You have X amount of time to finish it. So I kind of was pushed into becoming a backup driver. And then I was acting engineer for a while. So I was kind of like, well, I'm already in the role. I might as well just test. So I tested, I did well, I passed all my tests, and I'm driving an engine now. You know, I've got a full crew of four, which is rare in my area. I've got a very young backup driver who I think has got a lot of potential ahead of him. And I've got a new younger guy from up north as well, who's a probie. You know, I've got a new captain. So I think we got a lot of good things going on with my crew, and I'm really happy about that. You know, we like to train every shift. We're pulling lines, we're doing stuff. And hopefully I'm just kind of giving the guys a little bit of something else that they haven't seen before that they could think about.
Okay. And so my next question for you is, like, definitely I love hearing that you're trying to pass on the knowledge to the next generation. Was it that way when you were growing up? Like, did you surround yourself with people who actually gave a shit?
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, all right. So the Long Island Volunteer Fire Service is kind of crazy if you don't know anything about it. Like I said before, it's 100% volunteer except for one town on Long Island. Long Beach, Long Island has a paid department, but they also have volunteers. So it's kind of weird. Old culture was kind of like the frat boy culture back in the day. We've gotten away from that as I was getting into it, which was nice. I did try to surround myself with some really good mentors, you know, guys who were New York City firemen. You know, one of my first company officers, when I joined as a second lieutenant with us, he was a fireman on the back of ladder 157, and you know, and he was busy. He'd come home from work and be like, hey man, how was work? He'd be like, dude, it sucked. We only caught three jobs today. Like, dude, we can't catch three jobs in a year in my volunteer department. Come on, dude. He's like, three jobs and a tour? Come on. So I've always tried to surround myself by good people, even, you know, recruit school, probation, you know, trying to find those people. And, you know, I still do it today, man. I don't claim to know it all. I'm just a student of the game, kind of like you, kind of like everybody else. I try to surround myself with a lot of good firemen. You know, we talk about, you know, the smoke diver classes and all that, man. So many of my friends and guys that I truly look up into the fire service are Georgia smoke divers. And I personally will never be going through Dalton, but I have nothing but respect for those guys. And there's some badass firemen right there.
No, that's for sure. And that's the crazy thing too, because if you talk to them, most of them are like, nah, man, I'm just a regular dude. Like, you know, they don't give off that bravado like they're better than you or not. They want all firemen to be the best version of themselves. And even if even if you go through the program or not, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's definitely talking to a couple of them, you could just see it. Like, they're no better than you. They just decided they wanted to go through with it. Some of them got it the first shot, some of them it took a couple chances. So that's a the good thing about surrounding yourself with good dudes who actually care for the job.
Yeah, man, that's really what it's all about, in my opinion, is just finding those people who really care about the job and want to make those better and do a good job of making them better, and surrounding yourself with those people and just keeping all the toxicity away from the.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because it brings up a point where I met you in Tennessee
Yeah.
for the Jamaica
Jay Muller
Mullen
weekend.
weekend, and it was, you see, it was one of the, this is what I want people to understand. So, like, if you don't get outside, and I know I've said this before, and a bunch of guests have said it before too, but it truly does mean something when you get outside of your bubble and go to these places. You will learn things you never thought of. And I remember when Chief Nate Sturm showed off his the way he packages a firefighter
Pick
without
off
you
strap.
the pickoff strap, without using the SCBA waist strap. I've never seen that before. And then when I talked about it, you're like, oh yeah, I got one of them. And then you pulled it out and you showed it to me. And then I was like, hey, what's this tape for? And you're like, this is glow in the dark tape. And I, like I said, I'm very humble. I knew nothing about glow in the dark thing. I'm like, seriously? And you're like, yeah, you wrap where the handles are when you pull, wrap them, and you'll be able to see. And dude, I went home. As soon as I got home, I ordered everything off Amazon. I got it in, and it's one of those things I utilize it now. And I wouldn't have known it if it wasn't for Nate and yourself for
Chief
giving
Nate's one of the
me the
best, man. I
idea.
love that dude. He's a great dude. He's a fireman's chief. I would work for him in about a half second flat. I think most of the country probably would.
Absolutely.
You know, if he ever
Absolutely.
took a fire chief's job, I think he'd be having people line up at his doorstep.
Oh yeah. No, he would definitely be one of those who believes in the mission, believes in outside
Oh,
training, believes
absolutely.
in physical fitness, non-complacency. But anyways,
I mean,
but
the
yeah.
pickoff strap, like you talked about, man, that's not even my thing. Like, it's a big Florida thing, as you said. I've been lucky enough to be mentored and take classes and learn from some of the best out there. You know, one of the guys I really look up to is Basil. You know, Basil Ibrahim, he is a genuine great dude. And he was the one who kind of taught me about that during one bad tour. And, you know, he'll send you videos upon videos upon videos. Not a problem. He's happy to help. So I got a lot of that stuff from him, and I'm forever grateful for that because I think he's made me a better fireman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, I just had to say that, you will pick up and learn things by going to these training events, and you're like, oh shit, I never thought about that. And it's like all of them are there to make the job easier than it really is. But
It is, man. You pick up stuff, you network, and you meet some great people. You meet like-minded people at these conferences, you know. Jay Muller weekend was a great time. You know, unfortunate that it happened to happen. You know, Jay was one of the good ones, man. I knew him or ran with him a little bit back when I worked for Columbia because he was at the Irma. He was a good one, man. You know, I think the fire service is still reeling from that loss, you know, almost a year later now. But you know, the fact that we could get together in, you know, middle of nowhere, Tennessee, and put on a great weekend of training in his name was pretty awesome, man. See that kind of camaraderie come together for one of our fallen brothers was nothing short of amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So next question for you. The term aggressive, what does it mean to you, Pat English?
So a little bit of a loaded question there. It's aggressive is kind of one of those terms that some people love it and some people tend to get really upset about it these days. To me, it simply means just risking it all to save the citizens. You know, like that's what our job is, that's what our oath is, that's what we all swear, you know. Talk about all that stuff, survival space and all that, and I get it. We're not putting on a suicide mission, but the mission is they come first. It's not I come first or you come first, it's they come first. So aggressive means risking it all to save them, upholding our oath. You know, it's something simple, man. Like, it should be the default, in my opinion. We should be That's why we got the job. We're risking our lives to save others. Kind of like they did on 9/11 and all that stuff. It's what they do. It's so aggressive is just to me, just risking it all. You got to be smart about it, but you can't be, run into it, some of these crazy videos you see out there. But if there's a chance, man, go get it.
Exactly. I love how you stated it. It's not a suicide mission for all the safety culture individuals out there. It's, I mean, we have to think logically and methodically, but if there is any little space or any area where you can quickly get in and do your search and get out, why not? Why not perform it? And we
Absolutely,
need to
man.
practice on that. We need to,
I
you
agree.
can't, you know what I mean? Like, you can't just talk about it. You actually have to train on that aspect.
Oh man, absolutely nothing. You can't replace training. You can tabletop stuff all you want, but nothing will ever beat putting the gear on and putting in the reps and the hours. That's just
That's
my opinion.
no, I agree with you 100%. So we let's jump into it. How big is outside training? I saw a post the other day. Somebody posted that. I think they were a cadre member. I don't remember the name of the cadre, and I'm gonna leave it out even if I did. But they talked about how they had so many students who wanted to participate in a class and they couldn't because the department wouldn't allow for them to take their gear to outside training, wouldn't allow them SCBAs. So the individuals rented gear, rented air packs, and had them sent to wherever the training was. And it's one of those things. I understand you don't want the department doesn't want issued gear to be, ruined, damaged, that sort of nature. But the only way to actually get good at the job is to train in gear, is to go to these events. Because let's just be honest, a majority of these departments are not going to throw on the type of training that we go to for outside training. It's just not going to happen. If
Of
they are
course.
doing it, kudos. That's awesome. But most of the time, they're not. And if you want firemen to be good at the job, they can only do so much training in-house where you need to get outside to get more reps in an environment you've never seen. You can use your Connex box if you have one 100 times. You're going to know the layout where after after a while, it's like second nature. You're going to know it like the
Of
back of
course.
your hand.
So, I mean, like
So,
you said before, I mean, we talked about it a little bit earlier when we were talking about Mueller's weekend in Tennessee, man. Like, outside training is, there's nothing that beats it. I think it's super important. I understand, like you said, departments not wanting to burn up their gear and all that stuff. I get it. There are companies out there now, like, my buddies over at Soda City, JJ and Gates, they're doing a great job where they have limited amounts of gear that they're willing to loan out for a class of theirs. Shane Bentley from Bearers of the Oath has always been really good with that. Of he is a genuine great dude like that, and he literally sent a friend of mine who couldn't do that with his gear. He just sent him gear off eBay. Just Shane's just good like that, man. So you got really good people in the fire service like that, and it's tough, man. I know the gear is a investment. It's a what, $10,000 investment for the department. They don't want you to tear it up. They don't want you to burn it unless you're, doing it on their terms. So I get it. But at the same time, it's like, hey, we got to do something. It's kind of damn if you do, damn if you don't, unfortunately. But I think getting outside training events, nothing beats it, man. Not only do you pick things up from other people, like you were talking about earlier with the pickoff strap from Chief Nate and the little things I did to mine, guys, you just meet people, man. Some of my very good friends I've met are from outside training classes. I talk to them pretty much every day. And it's just, you don't beat that camaraderie and that networking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. In your opinion, do you believe should there be a years of service clause for promotion?
That's another dicey one. Man, I don't think there is a really true right answer on this.
Okay.
So I think it's very situationally dependent. So it all depends on where you're at, the area you're in. I don't think you can simply just say, hey, you need X years before you can promote to the X position. I don't think that's really fair because what if you come into a new department and you've got 15 years as a driver? Are they going to make you go through your PW book again? So I don't think you can say that, but we all know there's also a major between years of service and, actual experience. Just because you have 15 years on the job doesn't that mean you have 15 years of experience. And I mean, you're kind of limited to what your calls are in your area, what you run. But at the same time, if you're repeating day one, year one over for 15 years, that's not experience to me. So I think that's one of those tough ones. I don't think you can definitively say that you need 5 years before you can promote to a driver position or 10 years before you can promote to a company officer because it's very situationally dependent.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, looking at it, I definitely like the analogy of if you have 15 years as a driver, you move on to a new department, and it's like, yes, you're not, I'm not, I wouldn't expect like day one for me to be like, hey, I'm driving today, guys. Like, obviously not, but it's like, yeah, what do you do? Because in one hand, it would make sense if you let the person just, yeah, give them a few weeks or a couple months to get acclimated, let them go over the truck. Because, not the trucks are the same, but, pre-connects are different, levers are different, where they're located, how they're labeled, whatever, all that good
Course.
jazz. But to say, hey, we're gonna let you drive in a little bit. You're gonna ruffle some feathers, and it's just you know how the fire service is, man. Someone's gonna be like, oh, well, this new person who comes from blah blah blah, whatever, comes in and he's already driving. Like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, firemen, we could be our own worst enemy. Is what I'm trying to get at.
We can. In my full-time department where I work does a pretty good job about that, honestly, if I do say so. Like, we hire guys and they have a lot of prior experience, some crazy great experience. And we'll give them, we'll hire them as a fireman, but we'll give them their backup driver book. And we'll say, hey, this is what we expect you to work through over the next couple months and become a backup driver for us because of the experience that they have. Instead of hiring them day one and giving them a probie book. My part-time department, you can test right into becoming a part-time lateral engineer up there, which is what I did. But that's just part-time is a little bit different than the full-time. Part-time, I love it. It's great. Some great jammed-up firemen out there. We see a lot of good stuff, some great calls. But they also need more drivers out that way. So it's kind of, hey, you're a driver with your full-time department. Okay, great. We're hiring you on this date, and on this day, you're going to test, do our engineer test. Okay, cool. So it's day one. Hey, you're doing the engineer test today. Okay, cool. That works. So.
All right. Since we're kind of hitting on part-time and full-time departments, what do you think, either one, whether you're part-time, full-time, hell, even volunteer, what do you think they can do better if there's anything they can do better regarding recruitment and retention? Because it's hard, man. Like, we got guys that are leaving the service for various reasons. Either A, the department's not meeting the standard for them anymore. Pay is another big one. And I understand, like, nobody gets in the fire service for money, but most of us have families. Everything's getting expensive. If a department is being very stagnant, not wanting to pay their members below the medium income, I don't blame them for leaving to go to another department that's actually paying them. C, or I'm sorry, another example would be a department that actually cares for its members, actually wants their members to thrive, not holding them back, not throttling them down or chastising them for, your workouts are a little bit much, you need to tone it down a little bit, things of that nature. So what do you think a department can do, or what do you look for in a department?
So recruitment and retention is kind of, it's another one of those taboo subjects. You kind of hit on a lot of those, I see. Honestly, man, it's very situationally dependent again on what your area is, what your budget are. Like, you can't go to a department who has next to nothing training budget and expect them to pay for all your outside classes. You know, like, in a perfect world, yeah, you can say, hey, you know, I want to go to this conference, and your department will be like, hey, cool, we'll pay for, you know, XYZ for you to do this. You know, we'll pay the cost of the conference, you know, blah, 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 blah. That'd be awesome. Not every department's in a position to do that. So while I love that, I think that'd be great if we could get to that in the fire service as a whole, I don't think that's feasible. Just, I mean, recruitment and retention is tough, man. It's there's no single right answer. You know, my department, both my departments are going to be completely different than yours. You know, and they'll be completely different from, you know, Chief Ian Schulte in Pooler, Georgia. You know, he's another good friend of mine, you know, so, and that's only a couple hours away from me, but he's completely different. Different departments, different needs, different everything. So I think the biggest thing that you got to look for in a department is that they do their very best to take care of their guys. You know, you talk to guys on the floor if you're looking at that department, and you get a feel for the culture and see if that's a good fit. And if it is, then you go from there. If it's a bad culture, if they've got a lot of turnaround, might be something to look at.
Right. Do your little research, because firemen know firemen other places. So if you don't know somebody specifically, somebody that you know might know. Oh yeah, I know a guy that works there. Let me
Exactly.
I'll get you in contact with them, and you can talk. So like, pretty much what you're saying is kind of do your research a little bit.
You got it, man. If you're looking at making a move, especially, you gotta do your research. You know, even if you're looking to get into the fire service, get your foot in the door, do your research. See if that's a place that you want to do 10, 15, 25 years, you know, or if that's a place you want to do 2 years and then bounce back home, you know, because in South Carolina, a lot of people do that. They come down here, they get their certs, and then they bounce back up home, you know, which, hey, if that's your thing, that's your thing. I'm not going to knock it. Like, I get it. You got to do what's best for you and your family. But like, same time, it's also tough. But recruitment and retention is going to be different, man. There's no rhyme or reason to it. There's no single right answer, unfortunately. Like, if there was a single right answer, then everybody would be doing it by now.
Yeah, you're right about that. That's facts. Okay. So you mentioned earlier that the crew that you're with now, you guys are pretty squared away, jam up on training and things of that nature. What are a couple examples for anybody out there listening that you can tell us, like what would you guys do to get in some decent training at your station or your department?
So I'm assigned to an engine company on my full-time job. I'm lucky enough where my house that I live at right now with my girlfriend is in our secondary area. So, you know, my captain and I kind of have this thing where, especially I'll do it on overtime too, I have no problem with guys, you know, we pull up on my house and stretching lines onto my front door. It's a little unorthodox, it's a little weird, but it works. It's really great training. It gives them a different look, especially because I got a pretty big privacy fence that the gate swings outward towards the road right off the rip. So it makes your stretch a little bit weirder. You know, I'm not having them pull hose through my house. My pets would not like that, nor my girlfriend. But you know, hey, stretch to my front door. And as a driver, I'll usually make the connection to the hydrant and all that stuff. It was funny, man. One day it happened and we rent. So somebody was driving by and they texted my landlord, hey, the fire truck's at your house and they got hosed up. He was like, my tenant's a fireman. He's got it. I was like, all right, that works. So it's kind of unorthodox, man, but like you can do that in, you know, your first new area. If you got a house that's for sale or it's vacant or whatever, I'm not saying you got to make entry like an acquired structure, but you can absolutely pull up and stretch on it. You know, I know Prince George's County in Maryland, they do a really good job of stretching on homes and laddering homes and stuff like that. And that's great. That's their culture. That's awesome. I think that's jam up. Not everybody can do that. Not everybody does that. But it works for them, and there's some pretty squared away firemen up there. You know, my firefighter on my old engine was living with Richie up in PG County before he went back home. He was probably one of the best engine guys I know. He was squared away, man. So, but training wise, man, just getting uncomfortable with it. You know, hey, you haven't forced a door in a while. Let's go up to station one and play at the door. You know, hey, you haven't thrown ladders. All right, let's get some ladders going. You know, engine company, your bread and butter is stretching lines, right? But at the same time, you got to be able to do all the other tasks. You got to be able to take the irons off, throw, chuck them at the front door. You got to be able to force that door. You know, officer gets good at his 360s. You know, and then if you're an aspiring officer getting ready to ride up, get with your officer, work on 360s, look at hydrant location, stuff like that. So, I mean, there is a million things that you can do. I know Robbie Townsend from Dalton does a whole list for every day of the week. I have it written down somewhere, but it's an awesome list, and I'm sure he told you about it when you interviewed him. But I mean, if somebody's struggling for hours or don't know what to do on a certain day, I'd recommend they just look at that list, and they can modify it any way they want, change days around, whatever. It doesn't really matter, but it's a good, you know, benchmark, I think, at least.
No, I agree with you 100%. And I mean, you mentioned it's like to me, I look at so you know how most athletes study film, right? My version of film, this is gonna sound crazy, but my version of film is actually watching these year-end review videos, watching these little helmet cam videos. A blue collar fireman does a great job with it, where like you'll watch a department and how they operate. And so the way I look at it is some people might not understand or agree with me, but I told my fireman that I have, hey, if we have a first due box, if it comes out as a first due box, we're going to be first due. We're stretching a line to the front door. We're leaving it at the door. Some people don't like it. Some people might complain, well, what's the purpose of it? The purpose of it is to get the reps and the repetition in. That way, when it's an act, when it is an actual fire, you don't look like a dumbass stretching the line. If it's a call and it comes out as a possible structure, there's no harm or foul in stretching a line to the front door. You don't need to have your engineer charge it, but the lines at the front door, it sets the reps, it sets that second nature of just pulling hose off the truck. I know, like you said, PG areas, they will throw ladders. Some might say that's a bit excessive. Okay, if you say that's excessive, it's excessive. But the hose being stretched should be a non-negotiable. It takes 2 minutes with two guys, hell, three if you got it, if you're lucky, it'll be less than that to stretch it back. Like, I don't see what the whole issue is. Like, I remember James Rose put out a he had a picture on Facebook. Sorry, James, I'm name dropping you, but he put a picture on Facebook that like exploded in the comment section of, oh my God, there's lines on the ground, ladders on every side of the building. Like there's no need for that. And it's like, listen, if that's their culture, that's their culture. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. But me, I see it as no better way to train and get better at a job than doing it. That's like telling football players, you know, you watch Tom Brady, how many snaps did this man take in his lifetime? He just kept doing the basics, the basics, the basics. So.
There's nothing short, nothing wrong with just going over the basics. Do you need to build on those? Absolutely. But the basics need to be mastered. You need to know how to throw a ladder. You need to know how to force three. You need to know how to stretch a line. You know how to hydrant. Like, those are kind of your very basic firefighter one in a nutshell. You know, we can go down that rabbit hole. You can talk about search and all that stuff. And I love search. I think I'm passionate about it. It's one of my favorite things. There's a lot more that encompasses search, you know, talking about different types of search, talking about, you know, different rooms, you know, all these different things. Search is its whole different animal. And I think it's great. And a basic search is an absolute fireman one skill, and you need to be proficient at it and you need to master it. But the other skills is kind of like, okay, hey, you want to pull a hose line. Okay. Yes, there's different loads, there's different setbacks and all that stuff, but pulling a hose is pulling a hose. Now, I don't, do I understand the people who pull hoses in open parking lots? Absolutely. Hey, get the reps, get the hose on your shoulder and get it off the truck. Get used to how it feels. But then I also think you need to graduate from pulling in an open parking lot. You need to pull up to a structure. You know, as a driver, Even on fire alarms, I try to make sure that my positioning is on point. So I'm leaving room for the ladder. I'm knowing where my hydrants are. I'm getting out and I'm looking at my hydrant, seeing where it is, seeing, okay, hey, can I hand jack this? Or, okay, hey, second dude's gonna have to reverse lay, you know? So I try to, as a driver, just practice, you know, especially my positioning. You can never practice positioning enough as a driver. People get lazy, an engine's gonna wanna park right in front of the house. And I've gotten to the point where I just got to remind myself, hey, no, I need to leave room for my truck company. You know, it's just little things like that. It's every day you can do.
Absolutely, you're right. You're right. I mean, do with what equipment you have on the truck that you ride, 100%. So engine or ladder for you? I have to ask.
Well, I'm assigned to an engine company now. Ladder work is my passion. I love ladder work. Nothing beats it in my opinion. Whether it be going in for a search or going to that roof to get a nice cut, I love it all. It's not that I dislike engine work. Engine work can be absolutely fun. The first 5, 10 minutes of a structure fire as the driver can be really fun and exciting. And then you just kind of chill. You know, every once in a while, my thing is every 5 minutes, every 10 minutes. I'll walk around my truck, make sure everything's good, make sure it's not talking to me weirdly, nothing's leaking, nothing's broken, you know, nothing's different. So I keep busy doing that. But, you know, by lap number five, if it's an extended fire, you're like, okay, I've walked around this truck 5 times already. You know, it's a good habit to have, absolutely. And I maintain that I do that. But I love truck work, man. Truck work is my passion. I've always wanted to be on a truck company. I've enjoyed every time I've been on a truck company. I've caused some very good fires with truck companies, and it's a lot of fun.
Okay. All right. I kind of did forget to ask. Does your department, your full-time department, are you apparatus oriented? Do engine work, trucks do truck work, or is it like you kind of have to be good at both?
So. Both kind of. So we run with engines, a ladder, and a heavy rescue. Typically, the way my department operates is most of the time on a structure fire, the heavy rescue is going inside for the primary, and the ladder is going to go topside for the vent. Obviously, things can be a little squirrely if, you know, hey, the rescue's out somewhere and they're showing up after the ladder. Okay, they can flip flop because the rescue carries saws too. So you got to be able to flip flop like that. We're a small department, so you know, if you get forced into a mandatory OT day and you're an engine guy, you can be going to the truck or the rescue. So you kind of have to be proficient at all of it. Our ladder is a quint, so you theoretically can pull lines off it. It is not really the culture. You know, if we catch, you know, a car fire or, you know, a dumpster fire, something like that. Absolutely, we pull the trash line, no big deal. But on a house fire, you're not stretching lines off the first two truck on the quint. It's just not the culture.
It makes sense. If it works for you, it works for you. I have no, there's no questions that I can ask or throw, you know. I mean, that's just how, if that's how a department works, that's how a department works. I don't understand how some people can't understand that. Like, some people might take that to heart. And yeah, anyways.
I mean, I've heard some funky stuff, like my first department, the combination department, and when you get into the rural areas, there are rescue companies 2 through 5 are all out in the county. And so you'd usually have a backup driver there. He would take the tanker. He'd leave the tanker unmanned at the scene. Somebody else would take up the slack. He'd go in for the search probably with the first Uber rescue crew. But you're a 3-man rescue crew, but you're in-house with a 1-man engine. If you roll up on a first two fire in that area with that 1-man engine, you're going from rescue company to pulling lines being the first two engine company. It was kind of funky. It worked because we worked at it, but it was kind of funky.
Right.
But like you said, man, if it works, it works.
Yeah, I mean, there's who am I to judge for? If that's how departments operate, that's how they operate. So, yeah. Let's discuss physical fitness. You're pretty I've seen a couple posts that you've done on the Uncommon Fireman, and how important would you say does physical fitness go with our job?
So physical fitness is super important, and I'll be straight up honest, I'm not, some physical fitness nut, like crazy in shape. That's not me. I'm a human being. I have my vices. I try to make sure that I work hard, but I think being physically fit for the job is super important. We talk about it at all these trainings. We all have these guys who we know or we've heard about who know how the recliner and the remote for the TV work better than they know how their AirPack works. I pride myself on not being one of them. Like I said, I'm not by any means in the best shape. People can whip my butt on a PT ground all day long. But I think being physically fit for the job is super important, and kind of diving into that a little bit is, and I've kind of slacked on this lately a bit myself, and I'm getting back into it. But working in your gear, man, there's the gear is the almighty equalizer, as so many people have talked about with you before. You just put on your gear, even if it's just, jacket, pants, and some running shoes. Like, do a circuit. Just come up with something. Baby steps. Start working in your gear. And you'll find that you'll gradually over time add things. You can add a cylinder. You can add a pack. You can add on air, or you can just do it in a weight vest. So you throw your weight vest over your bunker jacket, stuff like that. And you'll find that over time, you're more comfortable in your gear for longer times. So it's gear is nothing beats it. And like I said, I've gotten a little bit away from it and I'm getting back into it now. Kind of sucks getting back into it. Kind of, it's like, dang, this didn't used to be so hard. And now it's like, oh, that kicked my ass. But man, like, you don't have to be Mr. Universe, right? Like, we're not. But at the same time, you got to be able to, at a bare minimum, at least know how to fasten your waist belt around your stomach and be able to. Don't be that person who has their waist belt hanging because it doesn't fit around their gear and their stomach. So, because I mean,
Yes.
we talk about it all the time, man. I mean, we look at the statistics. How many times have been people in structured fires and they go into cardiac arrest? And that's a downed fireman situation. I like to come home at the end of my tours. I like to come home to my girlfriend and my animals and my house. Like, I'd rather not go into cardiac arrest, but also, I'm not just putting my life on the line at that point. I'm putting my guys' lives on the line if I go down in a fire. So it's just by taking your job seriously, taking your physical fitness seriously, you're taking the lives of your crews seriously as well, I think at least.
No, that's a perfect way to put it. I mean, yeah, it's as simple as that. Because you may not want to take care of yourself, and I'm not saying that's okay, but you're being selfish because now not only are you putting yourself in harm's way, but now your crew, where if something happens to you, now they have to have the responsibility of getting you out. And not only that, your department as well, because depending on the situation, removing a downed fireman takes multiple firemen to
Does.
most of the time to get you out. So it's not just you and your crew, it's your department in general.
Exactly.
Love it. Love it. Let's talk leadership. Company officer, chief officers. We all know that there are some great company officers and chief officers out there. Definitely, we talked about if Chief Stern, if he ever decided to apply for a fire chief position and get it, man, I'm sure he'd have a bunch of people knocking on his door. Unfortunately, we don't have chiefs that think like him or kind of emulate what he thinks the fire service is. Now, granted, you do have a couple that that we all know, but I just can't understand chief officers and even company officers who forget what the job really is. It's about the men and women you serve. It's about making sure the community is number one priority. It's about making sure you, the men and women, the boots on the ground are dialed in. You know they exist. Like, you show them empathy when need be. So, yeah, let's hit on the leadership topic.
So leadership is a big one for me. I'm learning more and more about leadership as I move up the ranks, and I'll be fully transparent. I'm still learning. You know, it's still a new concept being a leader of guys to me, even being as the number two guy on the apparatus, right? Having two guys below me as firemen, like that's still newer to me. And I'm learning every shift, every tour, every day. And I try to make myself better and try and do the right thing by my guys. I was helping teach a training event in South Carolina recently with a bunch of my friends. And, you know, it was a great time. We had a lot of fun in search class. And, you know, it was one of the guys, an officer who was teaching the class, taking the class with us, basically said to me, he was, and I loved it. And I'm going to quote him direct. And he basically said, "Just because I have this shiny red helmet doesn't mean that I've earned it yet." And I was like, I love that mentality, you know, because in that same class, we did have an officer who would just kind of stand there and sit there while his crews did all the work, you know. So just because you got that shiny white helmet or that shiny red helmet, depending on what you get from your department, doesn't mean that you earned it yet. It just means you tested well. You got to earn that thing every day. You got to be, and being an officer's tough, right? You got a million different things to do. You can't always be the one putting your gear on and doing this. You got to supervise and make sure your guys are getting it done right, you know. But at the same time, it does pay as an officer to show your guys, hey, I'm putting my gear on. I'm getting my pack on too, versus just kind of standing around in your bunker pants and boots and just kind of supervising every time, you know. So I think a true leader, you know, I mean, I do love me seeing a battalion chief like Chief Nate, you know, in the uncommon group, full pants, gear, air pack, just burning cylinders, man. Like, I think that's a leader right there, man. Like, now he's not doing it for recognition. I know he doesn't want the recognition, but we give it to him anyway. But I think that, you know, truly is, it's showing his guys and his girls on the floor that, hey, I'm no better than you. I'm still getting after it, you know? So I think you got to earn that stuff every day, man. There's no, oh, hey, I'm a chief now. I don't ever need to put on my gear. No, that doesn't sit well with me. That's just me personally.
Yeah, I think that wouldn't sit well to the 10, I'm just gonna call it the 10%ers, but you know what I mean? Like that doesn't sit well with anybody that truly that listens to podcasts, that goes to these outside training events, that works out in their gear, that tries to be better at the job. Because to me, there's no greater feeling than seeing like a battalion chief, a chief of your department, whatever, company out like put in the work with the dudes, man. Shared suffering. It actually, like, if we're all suffering, like as a crew, the bond gets better as the days and the hours go by. Cause you know, hey, my leader doesn't just talk the talk. He walks the walk with us. And yes, time and a place, of course. Company officers have to do all the paperwork, hoopla, all that good stuff. But man, like, there's nothing like, hey, let's go out and train. And the first person that goes to do something is the company officer. And if he does indeed fail in training, lets the others know, like, hey, look, I'm a company officer, but I'm human too. We make mistakes. Let's get better at this. Like that, to have that openness, I think it's unparamount, man, for sure.
I agree, man. I think one of my biggest things is, as an officer, I think it applies to everyday life too. You know, you can't ask somebody to do something that you haven't or are not willing to do already. You know, like, yeah, you've been the probie, you've been the backup driver, all that. That's great. You get a new crew, it doesn't hurt to show them, hey, I'm doing it with you. Let's go. I think that, especially the new crew, that shows them, hey, you're willing to put in the work too. You're willing to put in the suffering with them. I mean, I'm all about that. I'm not going to ask somebody to do something that I'm not willing to do and haven't done myself in front of them before.
100%, 100%, man. See here. Let's talk about wellness and actually truly being there for one another. We all know the fire service in whole is it's a great aspect. I mean, we see it. We see the true nature of brotherhood in the fire service. Unfortunately, I always hate when it usually surrounds like a line of duty death, but let's take that line of duty death out of the equation. You know, the term brother gets thrown around a lot, brother, sister, and some mean it and some don't, and some just are using it as a buzzword. But for you, what does it mean to truly be there for another firefighter when in need?
So, like you said, the term brother and brotherhood, it gets thrown out a lot. It's overused in my personal opinion. I try to put my money where my mouth is. I tell guys, hey man, my phone's on 24/7. If I happen to miss a call and I see it, I will call you right back as soon as I see it. I try to be really good about that, especially if somebody's struggling, There's a lot of different things, but I also have my own network of guys, guys I can pick up the phone any time of day or night. And they would be like, okay, I'm walking to my car. Send me your location. Where are you? One of those guys is Captain Bew from Brunswick. He is probably one of the most genuine guys out there in the fire service, in my personal opinion. I could pick up the phone tonight at 2 a.m. and he could be going on shift tomorrow. And he'd be like, all right, I'm in the car. Where are you? I got you. He would give you the shirt off his back. He's going to make you earn it. He'll make you earn it. But if you are in need, you pick up the phone and call that man, he will be there 10 out of 10 times for you. And to me, that's what the true brotherhood and being a brother is all about, is being there for somebody when they need you. Or even just something as simple as letting them know that you're there, that you have that option of being that person they talk to. They may not take you up on it, and that's okay. Right? That's all right. That's not bad. But at least they know that they have you if they need you. That's what being there for somebody is to me. Being that person that says, hey, if you need it, I'm here. I got you.
Simple. It's
It's not a
easy.
complicated thing,
It's
man. Like,
not. No, you're right. It's not.
we're firemen, we complicate a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
But,
We do.
that to me is, that's almost one of the most simple things in the world, man. That's just, show up, show out. Like you said, eliminating line of duty deaths, right? But we'll talk about our buddy Jay Muller, right? I have never in my 16 years of fire service experience seen a country come together like I did for his death. I mean, like I say, it sucks that we lost him way too soon. But I don't know if you were at the funeral for that. I don't know if you made it down to Irmo for that. I
No,
went,
no.
but I'll tell you, man, there was probably close to 1,000 uniformed first responders on that at that funeral. And that's just like, damn, that's what brotherhood is. I saw people as far away as Texas, probably some California West Coasters out there. It was crazy, man. It was, amazing. And it sucked, but that to me is what true brotherhood is. People after that checking on people, talking to the guys in Irmo and Columbia, the guys who ran with Irmo. Hey, you good? Hey, listen, here's my number if you need anything. That's what it's all about to me.
Yeah. I mean, actually being there to say you're going to be there. Don't just use it as like, hey man, here's my number, call me anytime. The person calls you, leave a couple of voicemails, you never answer. Like that's not really the answer. And my thing is like, if you say, hey, here's my number, I got you, like, yes, sometimes you will miss a call, but at least return the, you know what I mean? Like return the
Exactly.
call, listen to the voicemail, answer the text. Don't just, yeah, shrug it off. I'll get to it. And you get so busy and wrapped up that, you totally forget.
Yeah, I mean, like, life happens, man. You got to take care of yourself too, of course. I'm a big proponent of, taking care of yourself and taking care of your family. But like, if you're gonna put yourself out there, then put your money where your mouth is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Pat, before we wrap up the interview, is there anything else you want to say to any firemen out there coming up that is either struggling with trying to find the balance between being good and being a good human, being surrounded by people that are making fun of them? Hey, why are you spending your own money on this training? or it's going to be hot today, there's no need to work out. Like, what would you say to those individuals?
Man, I mean, if people are giving you grief for spending your own money on training, best thing I can tell you is just ignore them. If you're in a place financially to do it and you want to do that, it's your money, it's not theirs. So you want to take the time to go get better? Good for you. There's 100 different conferences out there. I haven't attended anywhere near close to all of them, but I haven't been to a bad one yet. You're gonna meet some great fucking people out there, and you're gonna network, and that's what it's all about. And you're gonna learn stuff, even if it's just the basics. You're gonna get reps in. Someone's telling you, "Hey, it's hot out. You don't need to work out." Okay, then you don't work out. I'm gonna do me. Just do you, man. If it's what you want to do, that's the thing. I mean, talk about life balance, right? You gotta take care of you and your family first and foremost, right? But part of being a fireman, part of being a first responder is being there for your people too. And part of being a family of a first responder is them understanding and knowing that too. Your wife has to know that, hey, my phone rings in the middle of the night for somebody that needs me. I'm gonna have to get up and go. It's not easy, it's not fun, but I think just gotta find the people who are like your mindset, man. That's all it is. You gotta find like-minded people and surround yourself with them. If people start yapping at you, just ignore them and keep doing you. Find those people. There's hundreds upon hundreds of them. I could go down, spend another hour on a list of guys I know that would, easily talk to any fireman. Guys I look up to, guys you've had on your podcast many times, guys I consider good friends of mine. Two of my best friends are Ian Schulte and Caleb Smith, and I pick up the phone for them anytime, and they do it for me. I talk to them most days. They're great dudes. So you just got to find the people for you, man. Surround yourself with them.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. Perfect way to wrap up the interview. Pat, I truly appreciate you coming on, man, accepting the invite, coming on, talking shop, spreading the good word, letting others know it's okay to love the job and it's okay to move past the haters. Haters are everywhere. Unfortunately, I hate that we have them in the service, but they exist. And the best form of, I guess I would say, revenge is to show them, hey, that's okay. You made fun of me for this or that reason or going to this or that conference, but the proof is in the work that I put in and the results that I get from it.
Absolutely, man. It's like you said, there's haters everywhere. It's just a fact of life. Just ignore them. Keep charging, man. Just keep doing your thing. It's the best thing I can say is just keep doing your thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Pat, I appreciate you, man. Hope you have a great rest of your day.
I appreciate you having me on, brother. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Have a great day.
You too. If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.